The next LOS is to define shortfall risk, calculate the safety first ratio, and select an optimal portfolio using ROI's safety first criterion. Shortfall risk is the probability that portfolio returns will be less than some particular value over a given time, and the safety first criterion is to select the portfolio or asset with the least shortfall risk. ROI's safety first criterion states that the optimal portfolio minimizes the probability that the expected return on a portfolio falls below some minimum value. This minimum acceptable value is called the threshold level. ROI's safety first criterion can be stated as the probability that a portfolio's return will fall below the threshold return. If portfolio returns are normally distributed, then ROI's safety first criterion can be expressed as the expected return on a portfolio minus a threshold return divided by the standard deviation of the portfolio returns. This means that the best portfolio is the one that has the largest excess return over the threshold return per unit of risk, where risk is measured using the standard deviation of portfolio returns. So, when selecting among several portfolio alternatives, the best portfolio will be the portfolio with the largest safety-first ratio. The portfolio with an expected return that is the greatest number of standard deviations above the threshold return will be the least likely to return less than the threshold return. The next LOS asks us to explain the relationship between normal and log-normal distributions and why the log-normal distribution is used to model asset prices. Several financial assets generate returns that follow a log-normal distribution. A log-normal distribution is simply the distribution of a random variable y, where y is equal to e to the x, and x is normally distributed with mean mu and variance sigma squared. You probably recall that e is the base of the natural logarithm and is approximately equal to 2.718. Now, you don't have to remember this number because there is an e to the x key on both the TI and HP calculators. In theory, a normal distribution has no upper or lower bounds, but e to the x can never be zero or negative. This means that a log-normal random variable y is always greater than zero, and the distribution of y is skewed to the right. For the exam, what you need to know about a log-normally distributed random variable, when compared to a normally distributed random variable, is that a log-normal distribution is skewed to the right. A log-normal distribution is bounded from below by zero, and that the log-normally distributed random variable y is equal to e raised to the random variable x, where x is a normally distributed random variable. If we used a normal distribution of returns to model asset prices over time, we would admit the possibility of returns less than negative 100%, which would admit the possibility of asset prices less than zero. Using a log-normal distribution to model price relatives avoids this problem. A price relative is just the end-of-period price of the asset over the beginning price and is equal to 1 plus the holding period return. To get the end-of-period asset price, we can simply multiply the price relative times the beginning-of-period asset price. Since a log-normal distribution takes a minimum value of zero, end-of-period asset prices cannot be less than zero. A price relative of zero corresponds to a holding period return of negative 100%, which means the asset price has gone to zero. Recall that we used a price relative of 1.2 as the up move and down move terms in constructing a binomial tree for stock price changes over a number of periods. The next LOS requires us to distinguish between discretely and continuously compounded rates of return and calculate and interpret a continuously compounded rate of return given a specific holding period return. Discretely compounded returns are just the compound returns we are familiar with given some discrete compounding period, such as semi-annual or quarterly. Recall that the more frequent the compounding period, the greater the effective annual return. For a stated rate of 10%, semi-annual compounding results in an effective yield of 10.25%. monthly compounding results in an effective yield of 10.47%, and daily compounding gives an annual effective return of 10.516%. The limit of this process, as the compounding period gets smaller and smaller, is called continuous compounding. To get the effective rate for a 10% annual rate with continuous compounding is calculated as the base E to the power 0.1 minus 1 and is equal to 10.517%. To go the other way, we need to use the log function ln. If we know the holding period return, which is an effective return, is 10%, we can get the equivalent continuously compounded return by taking the natural log of 1 plus the holding period return, which in this case is 9.531%. A useful property of continuously compounded rates of return is that for multiple periods they can be summed to get the overall holding period rate of return. Our next LOS is to explain Monte Carlo simulation and describe its applications and limitations. Monte Carlo simulation is a technique based on the repeated generation of one or more risk factors that affect security values in order to generate a distribution of security values. For each of the risk factors, the analyst must specify the parameters of the probability distribution that the risk factor is assumed to follow. A computer is then used to generate random values for each risk factor based on its assumed probability distributions. Each set of randomly generated risk factors is used with a pricing model to value the security. This procedure is repeated many times, hundreds, thousands, or even tens of thousands, and the distribution of simulated asset values is used to draw inferences about the expected value of the security and possibly the variance of security values about the mean as well. As an example, consider the valuation of stock options that can only be exercised on a particular date. The main risk factor is the value of the stock itself, but interest rates could affect the valuation as well. The simulation procedure would be to specify the probability distributions of stock prices and of the relevant interest rate, as well as the parameters of the distributions, such as mean, variance, and possibly skewness. Randomly generate values for both stock prices and interest rates. Value the options for each pair of risk factor values. After many iterations, calculate the mean option value and use that as your estimate of the option's value. Monte Carlo simulation is used to value complex securities, simulate the profits or losses from a trading strategy, calculate estimates of value at risk to determine the riskiness of a portfolio of assets and liabilities, simulate pension fund assets and liabilities over time to examine the variability of the difference between the two, value portfolios of assets that have non-normal returns distributions. The limitations of Monte Carlo simulation are that it is fairly complex and will provide answers that are no better than the assumptions about the distributions of the risk factors and the pricing or valuation model that is used. Also, simulation is not an analytic method but a statistical one, and cannot provide the insights that analytic methods can. Our final LOS for this topic review is to compare Monte Carlo simulation and historical simulation. Historical simulation is based on actual changes in value or actual changes in risk factors over some prior period. Rather than model the distribution of risk factors, as in Monte Carlo simulation, the set of all changes in the relevant risk factors over some prior period is used. Each iteration of the simulation involves randomly selecting one of these past changes for each risk factor and calculating the value of the asset or portfolio in question based on those changes in risk factors. Historical simulation has the advantage of using the actual distribution of risk factors so that the distribution of changes in the risk factors does not have to be estimated. It suffers from the fact that past changes in risk factors may not be a good indication of future changes. Events that occur infrequently may not be reflected in historical simulation results unless the events occurred during the period from which the values for risk factors are drawn. An additional limitation of historical simulation is that it cannot address the sort of what-if questions that Monte Carlo simulation can. With Monte Carlo simulation, we can investigate the effect on the distribution of security or portfolio values of increasing the variance of one of the risk factors by 20%. With historical simulation, we cannot do this.